right, the next case before the court is In Re Hickey, case number 141682. And well, I understand that you want to reserve only 2 minutes for rebuttal?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. This case proceeds from a decision of the board in a reissue proceeding denying all of the claims. I'm going to address three errors in the board's decision. First, the board erred in failing to consider each of the references and the claims as a whole. Second, the board further erred by ignoring evidence that there was no reasonable expectation of success. At best here, the board presented an unsupported case of obviousness to experiment based on a general and isolated teaching of the Vanderwooden reference. And third, the PTO's arguments regarding emulsification and optimization reflect legal error and lack substantial evidentiary support.
All right, let me get something out of the way in the beginning, or a couple things quickly. You agree that MAG discloses all of the limitations of Claim 1 except but uses the CFC blowing yeast, right?
Correct. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So that's the thing that we're missing in Magnus.
Yes.
All right. Then the second point is, I think that it seems that you argue that government can't find, or PTO can't find a motivation to combine if the motivation isn't the same as the patentee's motivation in making his invention. But our case law is pretty clear that as long as there's a motivation, it doesn't have to tie necessarily to the patentee's motivation, right?
Yes, we agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Your Honor, turning to the first point, I submit this case exemplifies the danger of an oversimplified assessment of obviousness by taking an isolated and generalized teaching of a prior art reference. And here we have the PTO has reiterated its position that it can do just that it can isolate pentane from Magnus. And it's repeated its position, and we quoted it back in the introduction of our reply brief, because I think it's glaring. But this is precisely what the PTO cannot do. And this court has said time and time again that it's impermissible within the framework of Section 103 to pick and choose only so much of a portion of a reference that supports one's position to the exclusion of the remainder of the reference that other parts necessary to obtain a full appreciation of what the reference fairly suggests.
Okay, so you wouldn't disagree that there, at least whether it's from Vanderwooden or elsewhere, that the notion of replacing CFCs with something that's more environmentally friendly is something that was out there.
We don't disagree with that, Your Honor.
Okay, so the point is, how is pentane going to ever work in Magnus, right?
Would there be a reasonable expectation of success in achieving the claimed invention?
Correct. So on your argument about emulsification, you say that Vanderwood is different because it refers to polyether rather than polyester polyol. Why does I'm having a hard time understanding why that distinction matters.
Okay. Well, first of all, the claim is directed to a polyester polyol, a specific system with specific limitations and specific ratios for which the claimed composition obtains significant benefits for making rigid foam at a given density within a desired range, and also allow you to use an appropriate amount of hydrocarbon blowing agent. So there's a single sentence in Vanderwooden. It's not a generalized teaching. In fact, it's essentially a statement of a problem with the prior art. It's directed to polyether polyols, not the claimed invention, a polyester polyol. So you can't generalize anything from that. You can't generalize that.
Explain to me what one of skill in the art would understand that distinction to mean. I mean, they're both polyols. That's the government's only response, really, is that, well, they're both polyols. But what is the difference from a standpoint of what a chemist, one skilled in the art, would understand at the time between use of a polyester and use of a polyether?
I think the all I can point to is in the record is that there are two different systems and that it was recognized that you could emulsify pentane to some degree in a polyether polyol system, but there's no statement in Vanderwooden that you could emulsify pentane in a polyester polyol system, and I'd like to direct you to a particular page one point in Van der Wooten at JA-288. And if you read this, the opening portion of Van der Wooten, it comments on, not expressly emulsification, but it says that there are solubility. I'll give you a moment if necessary.
Yeah, 288.
288.
Got it.
And in the opening middle of that left column, it says that there are solubility and compatibility issues with using pentane blowing agents with existing polyols, and therefore new formulas had to be developed, quote unquote. So there is not only solubility problems, but there are compatibility problems. So even setting solubility aside, there are compatibility problems. That means there are phase separation problems. With even emulsification is going to have a phase separation problem. And Van der Wooten is teaching at a larger point that pentane cannot be used in existing polyols without phase separation problems. And there's no teaching in Van der Wooten, and the PTO doesn't have point to any evidence, that you could build an emulsification to the claimed concentration of a hydrocarbon blowing agent by using an emulsification process. It's not there. In fact, there's nothing in there on Van der Wooten that suggests you can even emulsify pentane with any polyester polyol, let alone to the degree recited by the claim limitations here.
Is that distinction addressed in the Hickey Declaration?
Let me take a quick look here. The Hickey Declaration addresses the fact that there are unexpected benefits and unpredictability when you mix pentane in view of Van der Wooten with the Magnus type polyol. And so the Hickey Declaration at paragraph 17, for example, goes into detail as to why a person of skill in the art would find that it's unexpected and surprising that one could compatibilize such a high degree of hydrocarbons in the polyester polyol of Magnus.
Counsel, let me ask a question. Getting above the chemistry for a minute.
Yes.
Tell me why, at the end of the day, this is not a factual dispute between your client and the examiner, and the examiner didn't agree with your client's view of the facts. Why, under a substantial evidence standard, is there no reasonable basis to affirm the result that you're complaining against?
Yes, Your Honor. First, let me take a step higher than that and say there is legal error in the analysis that the board engaged in. The first legal error was failure to consider the references and the claims as a whole. Considering just isolating pentane from Van der Wooten, there is no teaching, suggestion, motivation, or any reason to believe that you would have a reasonable expectation of success when you consider Van der Wooten as a whole to combine pentane with the polyol of Magnus to somehow get to the ratios of the claimed invention. So the first error is a failure to consider the references and the claims as a whole.
You agree that in Magnus you're in the ranges of the claimed invention. You're just saying that once you put the pentane in, you wouldn't have anticipated staying in those ranges.
You wouldn't have anticipated. No, I don't agree that you would ever get to the range by taking pentane and combining it with the Magnus polyol from a point of view of a reasonable expectation of success. And that's the Hickey Declaration. The Hickey Declaration provided substantial and undisputed evidence that one would not expect to get to the claimed ratios, the hydrocarbon rate, hydrophobic ratios, by combining the pentane from Van der Wooten with the polyol of Magnus. And that's undisputed. When you take a look at the references as a whole, the evidence is to the effect, and undisputed, that you would not be able to expect to combine those pentane from Van der Wooten with the Magnus polyol to achieve the claimed ratios.
Well, my concern, counsel, is if this were the context of a motion for summary judgment, I'd say you've raised a fact question. But it's not. The context is substantial evidence after a factual determination. And you have to show me that there's no reasonable basis the examiner could have reached the conclusion they did. That's what I'm interested in. Where is the lack of any reasonable basis?
All right, well, let me comment on, beyond the error I just commented on, which is a legal error, there's another legal error before you can get to the threshold substantial evidence test, and that is what we have here is an unsupported argument of obviousness to try. And as you know, under KSR, obvious to try can only be acceptable, permissible, and in very limited circumstances where there are a finite number of identified and unpredictable, or I'm sorry, unpredictable solutions. And here the board's decision fails on all three counts. There isn't a finite number of choices. They didn't identify what those choices were in the realm of all of the enormous number of possibilities. But perhaps most importantly, the choices are not predictable solutions. Mr. Hickey said that. Mr. Hickey's declaration.
Mr. Hickey, that's what I'm struggling with. All right. I mean, I understand that the board has certain burdens here, but it, Mr. Hickey's declaration says you wouldn't have expected, based on Vanderwoorden, to use the pentane and Magnus and then end up with the right proportions, the optimization. All right. But he never says, and one of skill in the art would never think that you could do that. Right? He doesn't come right out and say that.
I think a fair reading of the Hickey Declaration is there would be no reasonable expectation of success in combining using the teachings of the references as a whole, that one would arrive at the claimed hydrophobic and other ratios of
and
the claim.
And paragraph 17 that you're relying on?
I believe that's one important aspect of paragraph 17. In part, to quote, it says, it is surprising to find that much lower levels of these, referring to hydrophobic materials, in combination with surfactants are effective in compatibilizing these high percentages of hydrocarbons. He's saying that you can't, it's surprising, the art is unpredictable, and therefore there are no result effective variables. Therefore there is not a finite number of identified and predictable solutions. So again, there's a legal question that overlies the substantial evidence issue. You don't even get to the substantial evidence issue because of the legal error conducting what here is an unsupported obviousness to try argument by the PTAB.
How should we take into consideration the interested nature of the Hickey Declaration? How should we weigh that as opposed to a disinterested declaration?
Yeah, I think you weigh that as the PTO suggests it should be given some weighting. You should consider that, although I don't think that will drive a different outcome or a different analysis at the end of the day. You're not going to discount it to zero. There's no reason to discredit the Mr. Hickey's testimony under oath by declaration, and the PTAB has not shown any reason to do so. So I think it's worthy of some consideration, but I don't think it's material in the analysis end.
You acknowledge it's not as strong if it were from a disinterested source.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we wouldn't dispute that. Now, let me just echo a little bit further the point on obviousness to try, and I take your honors to the In Re Cyclobenzaprine Hydrochloride case, 676 F3rd at 1070, 1071, 72, and 73, where this court said, where the prior art at best gives only a general guidance as the particular form of the claimed invention or how to achieve it, or merely if it's a promising field of to experiment, an obviousness to try theory is impermissible. And that's what we have here. We have a generalized, isolated teaching that might stir up some interest to experiment with no expectation that one would arrive at these particular claimed ratios, which are associated with a particular end product. And there also are an enormous number of choices of what hydrophobic material, acid-based material, hydroxylated material, surfactants, amounts of water, and just to comment on the amount of water, there's no teaching that the PTO points to as to the claimed amount of water. They just say, oh, there's a wide range in Magnus, and if you look at Magnus at column 13, line 58, the range is 0 to 20 weight percent. That's not teaching the specific water limitation of the claim. And that point is just to emphasize that what we have here is a case of obviousness to experiment. Whether it would be obvious to experiment, and again, you need a finite number of identified, predictable solutions. And the evidence in this case is that you have none. You have none of those three requirements satisfied, and certainly you don't have predictable solutions. And for that reason, there's no result effective variables. The optimization test is unsupported. And one last count. Yes.
Yeah, we'll restore your rebuttal time.
Very good. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, we'll give you 3 minutes. We'll give the government 3 more minutes if it's necessary.
Morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. I think this case really boils down to the reasonable expectation of success, and that is a question of fact to which we're entitled to deference on. So I'd like to just go through what the basis is to show that there was a reasonable expectation of success. Van der Wooden teaches that you could substitute pentane for CFC in a polyester polyol. Van der Wooden also teaches that solubility depends on polarity. Magnus teaches that if you take a non-ionic surfactant and you add it to the hydrophobic component, you get surprisingly compatibilizing a blowing agent to CFC blowing agent, but it shows this surprising compatibilization. Magnus also teaches the starting point for the concentration of the blowing agent. Magnus specifically, in one of his examples, teaches 33% of Freon. And finally, Hickey simply substituted an amount of a different blowing agent into the Magnus composition and got the same result.
The key point here, though, is whether or not you can get to the optimization levels using pentane. The government seems to concede that emulsification is a key issue, right?
Emulsification is an alternative that the board looked to because there's also a teaching in Van der Wooden that you can emulsify, but it's not our only way of getting there. So actually, a simple substitution would get you there because if you look at Magnus, and I think it's example 16, it's example 16 in column 22, that has 33% Freon. So if you just put in 33% of pentane into that, you would fall within Hickey's claims. But even if you didn't do a simple substitution, Van der Wooden teaches you that you can change hydrophobicity, you can change polarity, and that will change solubility. And Magnus teaches you that hydrophobicity isn't the only thing. A non-ionic surfactant, in addition to hydrophobicity, can compatibilize surprisingly.
Do you see that there's any kind of distinction between a polyester and a polyether?
Well, Van der Wooden tested polyester-polyether blends, and he did find differences between them to some extent.
Right, but in Van der Wooden, in order to deal with what he was talking about for purposes of emulsification, he required the presence of a dimmer acid, right?
So Van der Wooden is only this dimer acid, so it is a different system than the Magnus system. But I think if you look at his emulsification teaching, which is at 289, the first two sentences under compatibility in column 1, he says, pentane, however, is barely soluble in these formulations and must be emulsified in the pre-blend. I actually think it's unclear whether he's just talking about the polyether polyol or the ones that also have polyesters admixed in. But emulsification is just vigorous shaking, and I don't think there's any reason to believe that vigorous shaking wouldn't work with a polyester as well as a polyether. So finally, we don't think that this is an obviousness to try case. To the contrary, we think it's a simple substitution. If you take every element of Magnus and just substitute in pentane for a chlorofluorocarbon, which the market demand was that you needed to do so, according to the Montreal Protocol, you can get the claimed invention.
Not that you necessarily needed to substitute pentane, but you need to substitute something.
Right. Well, hydrocarbon. Right.
Right. So hydrocarbon. So, right. But I guess I'm still struggling with how we get within the ranges claimed.
So, like I said, I think You could do a simple substitution, because Magnus tells you to use 33% freon, so if you use 33% pentane, that would fall within. The claim calls for 14 to 35%, I believe.
Now, but this is assuming that we now accept your attack on Hickey's methodology for his calculations, right?
Right. So what Hickey does is he takes this one example and he figures out that it has 68% of a hydrophobic component. And then he seems to say that because this dimer acid-based polyester polyol has 68% of a hydrophobic component, you would necessarily need 68% in the Magnus system. But that doesn't take into account that Magnus also uses a non-ionic surfactant. And Magnus says over and over, actually that seems to be what Magnus's invention is, that you get surprising results for compatibilization when you add a non-ionic surfactant to a hydrophobic component. So we don't believe that Hickey took that into account in his declaration, and that you would necessarily take the same amount from a dimer acid, which actually he's excluded from his claim, from a dimer acid polyester polyol into the Magnus. Why wouldn't you start with Magnus's starting point?
Did you attack his methodology, though, before this proceeding?
Well, the board basically just says that... I can point to it. So the board says that it finds it not persuasive because it's based on, and this is A7 to A8. So it says, it talks about the Hickey Declaration and that van der Woens polyol is, has an amount of hydrophobic material outside the claimed hydrophobic amount. But the board finds that not persuasive because we're relying on Magnus as our primary reference, not van der Woeden. What Hickey does is he starts with van der Woeden, and then he makes all his assumptions from van der Woeden, and then he just says, well, this would apply to Magnus too. But he gives no reasoning or analysis. The office's rejection starts with Magnus, because that teaches all the elements of the claim, and then just substitutes in the pentane. If the court has no further questions, I'll yield my time and ask that you affirm the board's decision.
All right, thank you.
I'll try to make a couple of quick points. First, I think there's a bit of a misstatement. Mr. Hickey looked at all three examples of the polyol from the van der Woeden reference. Second,
what's your response, though, to the, I mean, because this did seem to be like we had two ships passing in the night a little bit. You start with van der Woeden, the government starts with Magnus. Aren't we supposed to look at the closest reference and start there? I mean, the closest reference really is Magnus. You admit that only one claim limitation is missing.
Let me say it this way. Mr. Hickey looked at Magnus, and he looked at combining pentane with Magnus, and if you read the declaration, he says, reading the prior art as a whole, you would expect to need over 50% of hydrophobic material using the Magnus polyol. So he therefore concludes pretty readily that you're outside of the claims. The reasonable expectation is I can't satisfy the claimed ratios using the Magnus polyol with pentane. And that's why there's no reasonable expectation of success. And that's using, again, the Magnus polyol. And if I could back up for a second, I think the board's whole notion of what success should be measured against environmental reasons is legally erroneous. You got to look at success in terms of what's claimed. The claims are directed to a polyol for making rigid foam in the desired range, and the spec tells you you have phase stability problems. That's the context of success.
I understood the government to simply say that the environmental reason is the motivation. But then you have to have a reasonable expectation of success for the workability of the product for given its intended uses.
I think I can accept that. And let me highlight what I heard counsel say. You could try. I think I heard it more than once. You could try to use the 33% number from the Magnus polyol. You could try this. You could try that. You could try a lot of things. But as we briefed, there are an enormous number of things you could try, enormous number of decisions to make. And to say you could try when there is not a finite number of identified predictable solutions by definition, have presented an unsupported obviousness to try argument. This case is not, it's not sufficient under 103 to say I could try using a certain weight percent number and satisfy the claim. The issue is whether there's an adequate teaching looking at the references as a whole to arrive at the claimed ratios. The evidence is not there. Mr. Hickey's declaration is valid. It's unrebutted. It was simply ignored. And if you read the brief, the PTO's position is that we're entitled to ignore the Hickey declaration. And then they still try to attack it. But their first here argument is we can ignore it. Pardon me?
It's not ignored.
Well, their first level argument is I don't need to consider the Hickey declaration because I can legitimately take pentane from Vanderwood. But they do go on to then argue against it. No question there, Your Honor. So we would submit that the Patent Office has failed to establish a showing of reasonable expectation of success. The applicant is entitled to a patent, and we respectfully request that a reversal of the Board's decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case will be submitted.